Welcome to Urban Tales, a podcast that delves into the minds of young entrepreneurs that have moved to New York City in search of professional development and maybe even some personal development along the way.
Might not be fun at the moment, but knowing how to get yourself out of those sticky situations, knowing how to problem solve.
I'm your host, Maya Sargent, and today I am joined by Debbie and Liz, co-founders of Sunday Service. Sunday Service is a female Asian-owned ice cream business that came to be in July of 2020, right in the heart of the pandemic. Debbie and Liz's flavors are Asian-inspired, reflecting their childhood growing up, from ginger black sesame to pandan coconut. Sunday Service has since been mentioned in a variety of media outlets as a company expanding the New York City food scene. During a time when the food industry is more competitive than ever, today, Debbie, Liz, and I will dive into the origins of Sunday Service and how they have developed their business against the backdrop of New York City. So Debbie and Liz, welcome to Urban Tales.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
It's great to have you here to chat about Sunday Service. I can't wait. Why don't you start by kind of giving me a brief overview about how Sunday Service came to be and why New York City was kind of the chosen backdrop for your business? What was the story behind the start of it all?
So the way Sunday Service began was that it was the peak of the pandemic. You know, I was in my senior year of college at the time, and it was the summer break, and, you know, I didn't have an internship lined up. I was honestly just so bored and didn't know what to do with myself. So for my birthday, I actually received an ice cream machine. And so it kind of just started from there. You know, we were really bored at home. Me and Liz are big foodies. We love baking, cooking, and everything. And we kind of just wanted to make, you know, life at home a little bit more exciting. So we started playing around with different ice cream flavors, just all of these, you know, especially Asian-inspired flavors or flavors from home that we couldn't really find in stores. And then it started kind of just growing from there. I think we were making it for ourselves at first, and then we started sharing it with friends. And then I think especially it was like Liz's friends who were like, you should try to do something with this.
As to having New York City as the background, I honestly think we just got lucky that we were both living in a city that's so receptive to new products and new ideas as New York is.
And was it quite a welcoming space? Because I feel like going into something like that, how do you kind of navigate that space from it becoming an idea to it becoming a business plan that you want to pursue?
I feel like at first we were a little bit hesitant. You know, our friends were telling us like, oh, you should really think about turning this into a business. Like, it's really good. Like, we didn't really take it seriously. But then the more we thought about it, the more we realized that there really is a gap in the market for, like, I feel like there's a ton of ice cream flavors out there, but there's not a lot that specifically spoke to our childhood backgrounds, I guess. Or like, we didn't see a lot of like flavors that we considered super nostalgic. And we were like, oh, and I'm sure other people in New York feel this way. Like, New York is an extremely diverse place. People would resonate with the flavors that we make. So that's when we really started thinking about it and started planning it out. And to be honest, I think in a way the pandemic helped because we couldn't really be stepping out a lot. We didn't really have that much going on. So we really could put a lot of our energy and our focus into building this and making it happen.
And were people receptive to the flavors? Did you manage to grow that kind of outreach quite quickly?
I would say yes. So we started off on Instagram, just the flavors that we have. We drew a specific kind of audience that was, you know, people who were already open to Asian flavors or who found them nostalgic themselves. We would also utilize the platform like Instagram and stories to take polls and like ask people what they wanted to see. So that was a good way of kind of working with our existing customer base to just continue to make what they like, but also what resonated with us.
And how have you found the experience of being a small Asian-owned female business in New York City? What's that environment been like to navigate? Has it been more difficult? Has it been easier than you imagined?
I do think it's actually been a lot more like welcoming of an environment than we had envisioned.
That's so
fantastic. I feel like New York City gets a bad rep for being very like cutthroat, you know, but it hasn't been like that for us at all, I feel like.
Do you think that's because it's in the food scene as well?
I think so. And I think, again, there's just so much diversity in New York as is that they're almost more prone to seeing other women of color in businesses and, you know, having those positions of power and things like that. And so we are very lucky to have started this in New York and to have been in such an open space. And yeah, I think the food industry, too, it can be difficult, but people are always so welcoming and so eager to help, I think, especially with other female co-founders we've met and spoken to. They understand that some of the difficulties that it might have taken, especially for them. And so they're always super open to helping us, giving us any feedback. If we ever have any questions, we can always reach out to them. So it's honestly been a great experience.
So I'd like to explain for the listeners where the name of your business, Sunday Service, comes from. And that was because you used to make the ice cream during the week and then deliver to your customers on a Sunday, right? And I absolutely love that. But I also think it's interesting that then as the world opened up, you moved your business online and then also began pitching to grocery stores to have this other outlet rather than doing your sales solely directly to customer. Do you think it helped being in New York City that because everything is so on demand and we're in such a close proximity to everyone and everything all of the time, do you think that proximity helped you navigate the food scene with more expertise?
Yeah, definitely. So even something, for example, our co-packer, who helps us actually make and manufacture the ice cream, they're located in the Bronx. It was so easy for me to physically go and just, you know, check out the location, talk to them directly. And you might not be as lucky in other cities, other states, like it might be a lot farther away and it would just be a lot more difficult. So even that first step was it was a lot easier for us because of how close everything is in the city. And then when it came to grocery stores, definitely, like New York too has a lot of specialty boutique grocery stores or just these smaller food stores that are also already open to Asian flavors or even focused primarily on Asian flavors. So that was another aspect for us that made it a lot easier to kind of enter these stores.
So we've spoken a lot about how New York City has had a positive impact on your business development. Would you say the city feels like an inherent part of your brand identity?
I think so. I think our brand definitely wouldn't have been the same had we not been in New York City. I don't think we, first of all, would have been like as motivated to start it. And I don't think we would have been as sure of ourselves and of the response that we were going to get. Because we knew that like New York being as diverse as it is, having as many cultural backgrounds as it does. And I feel like New Yorkers in particular are very open and interested in trying new things. So I think that's a big part of who we are. We're quite bold in the flavors that we produce, the things that we want to try out, because we know that New Yorkers are receptive to it. And I do think it has been part of our brand identity. But I think our brand identity also encompasses more than just New York. I feel like we hope to like expand someday. And I think hopefully there'd be other people in other places that would still resonate with our flavors.
I'm sure there would be. Your flavors are so incredible and so interesting. To rename a few, we have pineapple cookie, ginger black sesame, pandan coconut. Where does the inspiration for these flavors come from? Are they purely from nostalgic memories?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a lot of them are definitely from nostalgic memories. For example, the ginger black sesame is something that we grew up around. So it's a Chinese dessert that is like a ginger, like a sweet ginger soup, and then rice balls are like kind of like mochi filled with black sesame. And so that's something that we used to have a lot that was super comforting. Also something that we would get on Sundays a lot, hence, you know, kind of Sunday service. And so that was definitely a flavor from memory.
I love that there's like kind of that inherent kind of family backbone to it and childhood nostalgia, something that carries and resonates with people. And as a food business owners working in a market that's reportedly worth over $900 billion in the US, how do you manage kind of realistic expectations for your business in New York City without kind of getting overwhelmed by the market when, as fantastic as New York is, that you can be so hands-on with your customers, you're also so upfront with other brands that are also maybe kind of doing similar things in a similar market?
I think it always helps to remind ourselves that originally we almost didn't plan this to be a business, that it was just kind of like a fun thing that somehow was able to spin into a side business. And I think so reminding us of that and the fact any growth we've had since then is growth, it just makes us feel a little more grounded, a little more grateful that we've even been able to get to where we are right now. Just keep in mind where we started.
Yeah, and like on that note too, I mean, obviously we didn't start with any financial backing. It was really just a very much like a home DIY start it yourself business. You know, obviously being in New York, things are more expensive. I know we did a lot of research before going into it, and I think it was Liz who found that of a lot of pastries and desserts, ice cream actually has one of the lowest margins. And so, you know, in terms of like being realistic, we had to also realize, talking to other small businesses and co-founders, that in terms of profit in the business itself, it's not going to happen within the first few months. And just be realistic with your own expectations. Be understanding that you're not going to suddenly be a millionaire within the first year. Like it's a slow journey, and just being patient with that.
I think that's why it's so important when I have spoken to co-founders that they're so passionate about what they're selling. And I think without that passion, it doesn't even feel like it could ever be a thing, because you have to kind of give everything to it. Obviously, you started during the pandemic. World completely shifted when COVID happened, for better and for worse. People ended up going into industries they never imagined. How was it kind of establishing this business from your home? Had you ever thought that you were going to be setting up a business like this? Had either of you ever wanted to do that, considered yourselves being self-starters of any business, really?
We grew up in quite an entrepreneurial family. Like, our grandparents were entrepreneurs, our parents are entrepreneurs in a sense too. And so I feel like that's always been a little bit in the back of our heads, but it's not like we were super like sure that we're like, oh, we're going to definitely create a food business, for example. I think it helped though, growing up in an entrepreneurial family, because we kind of always have that mindset of you can start your own business. And we, I guess, learned from the stuff that our parents would teach us about just, if you're passionate about an idea, to just like go for it and to try it out.
And now one of you lives outside of New York City and the States in Indonesia. Do you think you have a different perspective on New York as a place to grow a small business?
I used to think that New York City was a really hard place to start a small business, because obviously things are so expensive in New York. But then on the other hand, I'm starting to realize that I think one of the biggest luxuries of starting a small business in New York is that New York is a city filled with so many different kinds of people, that no matter what your niche is or what you're passionate about, you'll definitely find an audience. You'll find other people who are interested in what you're interested in as well, no matter how niche. And so in that sense, you're not as limited by going after trends or going after what's currently popular. I feel like you really are free in New York to pursue what you're passionate about. And I think that's one of the best things about starting a small business in New York. Like, you're truly not limited in the niche that you want to go after. But yeah, the downside definitely is the cost. Like, I feel like, for example, had we started somewhere like California, where there's a lot more space, I think we could have maybe considered manufacturing it on our own. Whereas in New York, obviously, I don't think we would have the funds or the really like space or anything to do something like that. If we were to manufacture, maybe we'd have to look into New Jersey or something. And so that kind of like made us go into the co-packing route.
Liz, do you think now living in Indonesia, you have a different perspective?
Yes and no. I feel like sometimes I have different inspirations here, or like I would see different flavors here that I don't see as much in New York, that I could like feed off to Debs and be like, oh, hey, would you consider for a pop-up like doing a flavor like this? And then, so I think in that sense, that's like good, because I have like all new surroundings. The only downside being is that I sometimes feel like I'm like further removed from the business. I feel like it's harder for me to be more hands-on. It's harder for me to keep in touch.
Yeah. And Debbie, what's that like, not having Liz in person, obviously, because it started from such intimate surroundings?
Yeah, thankfully, like we mentioned earlier, we did switch from doing the entire thing from home to having a co-packer and kind of just being in stores. So if she had gone home in the midst of us still having to make everything and deliver everything on Sunday, that would have been terrible. It was a very hands-on process in the past, and it was just a lot of physical labor. And so now, of course, it is still difficult sometimes. For example, if I work a full-time job too, so if ever we need to, you know, get on a call with somebody, like a partner, or even just visit new grocery stores to talk about product again, and just random physical things like that can sometimes be difficult to manage time with one person. But definitely it's nowhere near as difficult as it could have been had we not switched kind of our business model. And yeah, I mean, we're sisters, so at least communication has never been an issue for us.
You've been co-founders for 2 years now. How has the first year compared to the second year in terms of work-life balance or cultivating healthy work habits? Because I feel like when you're so invested in a product and a project, it's so hard to maintain this work-life balance that we seem to be talking about so much at the moment, which is crucial, but sometimes in this world, very hard to detach from.
Yeah, definitely. I think, so when we first started in our first year, again, I was still in my senior year of college, and you make sure you have free time. So I think that wasn't as much of an issue for me as it was for Liz.
Yeah, I think at that time I was still working full time, so it was a lot harder time management wise. We were kind of both doing everything, if that makes sense. We didn't fully like find our niches yet, or sometimes if Debs had a lot of time, I just assumed she would take on extra responsibilities, which isn't always fair, right?
Thankfully, we had been living with each other for about a year or two before that, so that was fine. But again, it's like living together casually and is very different from having to live together and then work together. And genuinely at that time too, you know, I knew that I had more time. Liz knew that too. And so it was difficult in the beginning, but also now that I do work 9 to 6, I understand her tiredness more. Like, I think when I was still in school, I was like, okay, well, you just finished work. Why aren't you immediately making this ice cream? So now in the second year, I think we have a little bit more of an understanding of each other's workloads too, and how to split the work better. So now, and if there's anything when it comes to crunching numbers, or that's more of Liz's role, and then I, especially here as the one person who's physically here, I take more on, like, you know, the grocery store side, the partnerships, marketing, things like that.
That helped a lot too. Like, over time, we've kind of like really found our niches, so we know where our responsibilities lie. And so I think that's helped a lot.
And has it gotten easier, do you think, the whole process of like running a business in itself?
Definitely. Everything was a first time thing for us. We had almost like, honestly, like no idea what we were doing, how a business ran. And so I think the first year, and especially the first few months, were the hardest. But I think over time, we've gotten a little more of an understanding.
We'll be right back.
The only thing I am thinking is, the longer you exist, I guess it exposes more hurdles and obstacles. How do you keep yourself motivated to keep going as a brand and as a business?
Yeah, we've definitely experienced more hurdles as we switched our business model. Something as small as just, so for example, when we were looking for grocery stores to be in, we looked for, of course, primarily Asian ones because we knew that they already attracted the audience that we needed to. But we did come into some issues with, for example, if they're focusing only on Japanese products, they would turn us away because we weren't a Japanese-owned brand. So things like that, where I think that was definitely a little bit harder. It was a hurdle that we could get over because we just, you know, you just keep trying and keep reaching out to other brands, but it was kind of more of a personal thing for us, knowing that it's your business and that no, there's nobody else to help run it. And if we don't put in the effort, nothing's going to happen. I think that is motivating enough to know that we started it for a reason. We're passionate about the product, so we can't just kind of leave it behind because it's difficult.
On that note, I guess, what is the long-term goal for Sunday Service? Do you see it developing? Is there another avenue that's kind of become apparent that maybe that's something you'd want to go into?
A personal thing that I would love is more flavor options available. But for that to happen, I think we'd have to get into more grocery stores and kind of expand our reach currently and expand where we're available. I think that would be a great goal of ours, to just be more easily available for people to purchase throughout New York. I think we're very much still like Manhattan focused right now, so be able to expand into the other boroughs would be great.
Yeah, I think that for sure. And then, you know, more of a long-term goal, if we could ever go, maybe not statewide, but at least in a few other states, that would be super exciting for us, just to get our brand out there a little bit more. We have our goals and everything, but we also know that the way we started was so spontaneous that anything could really happen. And so we're trying to also keep our minds open.
Now you have that kind of foundational business model as well. Does it make reaching your goals a lot more exciting, and like it motivates you to want to get there?
Yeah, I would say so. Now that we just feel a little bit more balanced, it's a lot easier to set goals for ourselves. But at the same time too, it having this different model has also made it feel a lot more business-like, in a sense that we love running our own business, but part of the fun of it initially was that it was kind of just a side project. Managing time, of course, too, now is a little bit difficult. So, you know, there are days where sometimes we're both just like so exhausted, and it's hard to keep that motivation and to keep wanting to, you know, give it your 100% when you're already so tired. But again, we've started this business and we're still passionate about the product itself, the brand itself. And so it does help us kind of just keep pushing forward.
And how do you like rally around on those days when you are so exhausted? What drives you to be like, this is worth fighting for?
I think just the thought that we've already come this far. So just the idea that like, if we just dropped it right now just because we were tired, it would feel like such a waste of our efforts. And I feel like a lot of people would be disappointed. You have to remind yourself that like, oh, there are people out there who would be, other than us, who would like be upset if this wasn't a thing anymore.
And then on my end too, I think to bring back kind of the exciting aspect of what I used to love most, which was creating new flavors. I try to have pop-ups here and there. And I think that, one, excites our customers, allowing them to kind of taste test and sample these new flavors, because we used to try to rotate our flavors pretty frequently, like every few months. And so it's for them as well as it is just for me. Like, it's something exciting. It's something different. It's obviously still a good way to earning revenue aside from just selling through stores. But that's something that I like to do just to kind of reignite my passion for the business and the products.
Being able to see your customers face to face, it reminds you why you're doing it.
Definitely, definitely. I think, you know, our first ever pop-up, we just weren't knowing, we didn't know what we would expect. But then we would meet people who were like, I follow you ever since the beginning, and I'm so excited to see how far you've come. You know, we're like, we're your number one fan. And that was just so mind-blowing to us that it was really great to see.
I feel like positive comments and reviews must just be everything to read.
Definitely, definitely.
And I have one final question for the both of you. You've created this fantastic business. It's come from home. It's rooted in your home culture. What is one thing you would tell your younger self now as co-founders looking back? What would you tell a younger you?
I'd say don't be afraid to reach out and to ask for help, because a lot of people are a lot more willing to give it than you think. And also just like, don't overthink things in some ways. I feel like initially I used to always think if you wanted to start a business, you'd have to do a ton of research. You'd have to like know everything about the market segment that you want to go into and like all these little things that you need to plan out. But the way we started was almost so spontaneous, and in a way that worked out for us, because I feel like sometimes you feel like you have to know everything in advance and it kind of like scares you from even getting into it. So I think something I would tell my younger self is definitely like, don't overthink things. If you have something you're passionate about, just try it out. The worst that can happen is that it won't happen.
What about you, Debbie?
Yeah, pretty similarly. I think starting off, especially when I was younger, I felt like I was too young or too inexperienced to really try things or do things. And I think something that starting a business so spontaneously has taught me is sometimes you just have to do it. You can have an idea and have your imagination as go as far as you want, but if you don't put any action into it, it's just never gonna happen. So it's always worth it to try. Don't let fear stop you from doing things that you're passionate about. Have confidence in yourself. If you truly believe in something that you're working on, you truly believe in your skills, that should be enough to really prove yourself. So don't let fear or just this feeling of not being experienced enough or being too young or being too naive, like don't let that get in the way of your passions.
Just touching on that, do you think having like developed professionally, you've developed personally kind of in tandem with that?
Definitely. I think, yeah, confidence wise, I think just knowing now that even though we are such a small business and, you know, you can't compare us to like a Ben and Jerry's or something like that, I think just knowing that I've been able to start something and that I've been able to make a business just with the limited resources that we started with, I think that's been a big confidence boost for me. And, you know, being a little bit more sure of myself and sure of my skills and being able to promote yourself.
Do you feel the same, Liz?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a big confidence boost in a way, because we were so unsure of ourselves starting out, and then we managed to do a lot more than maybe we thought we would. So I do think it's helped a lot in just, yeah, like Debbie said, like being more sure of yourself. And even if you're not, like pretending like you are.
Fake it till you make it in everything.
So even just like, for example, like presentations at work or like talking to your higher ups, you're better able to do that. Because like once you get so many rejections from so many grocery stores and like everyone around you, you're almost like a lot less fearful of rejection.
It's such a testament to becoming like the most resilient you can be, starting a business, starting anything. I think if you're so creatively invested, it's you end up becoming so resilient by the end. You're like, I'll send another email. I'll send 50 emails. Pulling all those silver linings, I think, out of what could potentially be a difficult experience. And I'm sure it has been, but also must be so, so rewarding for you. Sometimes it's so easy to get bogged down in such like the nitty gritty day to day things that we never really kind of take a look back and review what we've done. And kind of give ourselves credit for that and be like, wow, no, actually, I have come this far.
Yeah, definitely. No, and I think it has just been a great experience in, first of all, time management and also just getting into sticky situations. And, you know, if you're going to trip and tumble and it's not, you know, it might not be fun at the moment, but knowing how to get yourself out of those sticky situations, knowing how to problem solve, it's just genuinely been a great experience.
Thank you so, so much for joining me today on Urban Tales. It's been amazing to hear your story, and I really, really admire you guys as female business owners. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience with me.
We are always so, so touched when people reach out and want to hear our story. So thank you.
And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you so much to Debbie and Liz for sharing their Sunday service story. Join me next week when I will be talking to John Sherwin, co-founder of Hydrant. Hydrant is an electrolyte powdered drinks company geared towards improving hydration through science-backed wellness products. As a fellow Brit, we will talk about the attraction of the States when looking to pursue his professional dreams as an entrepreneur. You can catch more episodes of Urban Tales every Tuesday at 2 p.m. on wfuvnews.org, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.